1999, this is just a pretend one. We're checking it.
You didn't ask me that you were interested in whether the story of struggle and survival that my father read to us, you said, sound like pretty strong stuff for a young, impressionable and child. And were they in addition to or in place of a traditional religious education?
I crossed that off of my sheet.
Oh, okay, because they were not, they were what I got. I did not get a traditional religious education.
Came to my senses.
And apparently, you know, parents, I think, had a much more, a much higher estimation of a child's ability to understand things than maybe a lot of parents have today, I think. Because I don't think that, I don't know that, you know, my father and mother, you know, would feel that they had to sit down and explain these things in detail. They made an assumption that we did understand, and so it was like a, what shall I say? It was like a global impression. It was like a global presentation of an overall picture, and that you picked up from that, and they assumed that you did pick it up and did understand, and that by repetition also of different stories, you certainly got a feeling that what these writers were writing about was very pervasive. It was part of that atmosphere. And that they read to us from those stories because those stories did represent for them a sense of what they went through, even if it wasn't exactly what they themselves had gone through. I think they had a very strong identification with what other immigrant workers were going through because it was related to what their experience had been, without necessarily being that specific. So, and one of the things, I guess I was talking to Marilyn last night about, I forget what, and she was saying that she felt that Jewish immigrants, maybe particularly Jewish immigrants, had a strong sense of oppression and identification. Well, she was saying with working people, and I said, well, I'm not sure it was with working people when they came to this country, before they came to this country.
Well, they have this practically, I mean, it's embedded in the Jewish psyche, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it is, but also she was saying about working people, not necessarily working people, because my mother and father came from small towns. My mother's father was a worker. He worked for somebody else. He was a butcher, and he didn't own his own business. So he worked for somebody else. But my father's father was a contractor. He had his own business, and he hired other workers. So my father's identification with the concerns of working people, something that he picked up in this country. It was more a sense of oppression as a Jew. For example, even though my paternal grandfather was a contractor, he didn't have a lot of power in the little village that they lived in, because there were powerful landlords. The power structure in the small towns was primarily one of landlords to the, I don't even know what, small farmers. That's what most of, that's what the power structure was. Although my mother's family lived in a larger city, and there were businesses there, so there may have been more, you know, my grandparents weren't farmers. We didn't have chickens and things like that, the way I think my paternal grandparents, even though he was a contractor, I think they did have, you know, things like chickens and get have their own eggs and stuff. So, but the general feeling of oppression that my parents and other immigrants came to this country with had to do with their being Jewish and being an oppressed group as Jews, facing pogroms and facing tremendous discrimination, not just discrimination, but, you know, and that they picked up from the power structure from which, you know, where they had lived, this sense that they did not have power, and that they had a feeling of resentment about, you know, about the fact that they were powerless, and that they were trying to escape from that too.
But how does that make them different if it does from any other groups of immigrants who?
No, I'm saying it wasn't, because a lot of the non-Jews were also small farmers, right? But I'm saying
oppressed, and looking for a better life.
Yeah, yeah. No, it doesn't that much. Although there was certainly, I would say, the Jews considered themselves a group apart.
Indeed, and that's the difference.
Yeah, yeah, they did. Even though,
still do.
Even though, yes, even though many of their concerns and the conditions under which they lived were so similar,
universal.
Yeah. So, but. Anyhow, but they,
okay.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Oh, and I did wonder, did you read to Donna and Karen the same kind of stories, or remember those, if that was part of, did you pass that on to them?
I would say yes, I passed it on to them, but not only that, my father also passed on many stories. He didn't read to them from books in Yiddish.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't understand Yiddish. So he did not read to them. But he most certainly, he told a lot of stories about his childhood. And I'm trying to think whether my mother did as much. Mostly it was my father. My father would talk about when he was a kid. He lived in this town. There was the Bistrica River, and it was a big commerce river. They floated logs down the river, and he and the other kids used to hop on the logs and go down the river a ways on the logs. And he talked about his pet, who was a big dog whose name was Bear because he was so big.
Another barrier.
Yeah, I forgot to ask you how Emma was.
Okay. That's all right, you know. It's
yeah, okay, I'll talk to you about it. He talked about the fact that when he was 8 years old, and see, I remember his telling these stories to my daughters because they talked about it afterwards, that when he was 8 years old, his father made him like, I don't know if you could call him a foreman, but a person in charge of a crew that his father sent to another village to build whatever they were going to build. Put an 8-year-old kid in charge. The sense of responsibility that my father developed and that I think I told you about in his whole life stemmed from the fact that from his earliest years, he was given that responsibility. Now, how his father knew that he would be able to carry through on that, you know, it's hard to say.
I think children, in my mind, based on absolutely nothing, children were viewed very differently, and expectations were assumptions that it would work.
That's right.
They were not
right.
Children. And they were farmhands.
They were little adults.
Yeah.
They were little adults. So, yes, my father talked about a lot of those things. He didn't, he talked about things in relation to his childhood and growing up. And he didn't really talk, he didn't really go into with my kids and Michael the experiences that were contained in the books that he read to us. He didn't. And those values, I think, were much more what Sam and I, my husband, gave to Donna and Karen without reading those books, but transmitting those concerns that were expressed in the books that my parents had read to us. And actually, I'm trying to think back now, and I'm really not, you know, my memory isn't good enough to remember whether when my daughters were small, whether I went looking for books that were written for children about and some of these kinds of struggles. I can't remember. I know I did later on when I became a nursery school teacher. I most certainly did. But I can't remember whether Sam and I did that with our kids when they were little.
Well, rather reading it, we lived it and just trying to...
Yes. Well, that actually, that's right. They got a lot of it by going with us to demonstrations, to peace marches, to if we went to a picket line, and you know, because I know that my kids knew from earliest times on that you didn't cross the picket line, no matter what.
The cardinal.
No matter what.
That's right.
So obviously they got it from something that they got from us, probably from Sam and me more than from my father. So, you know, it's a combination of these concerns that came together, I would say. So, okay.
Outstanding. Well,
The American Youth Congress was an organization that was formed about, I went to high school from 33 to 37.
I'm 34 to 37,
3 years, okay, because I was in junior high before that. And actually, junior high back in those days included the first year of high school. Mm. So then, actual high school was 3 years. Junior high was the 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. And I guess I went to junior high, must have been, until 30, from 31 to 34. 31, that's right, 31, because I was 10 and a half when I started junior high school, in the 7th grade, right. So the American Youth Congress was an organization that was formed nationwide, obviously, because it was called the American Youth Congress, at the high school level. It wasn't the college level organization. And it was formed, I'm trying to think what were the main issues. I think it had a lot to do, it was anti-fascist, because Hitler had come into, was in power at that time, and when we went to Washington, there were thousands of people on the White House lawn, we were protesting the fact that Roosevelt had not taken action against the Nazis, also that the United States was, they were getting steel from Japan. Japan was also fascist already at that time. So it was a protest around it was anti-fascist. It was around foreign policy. I'm trying to think back, and I can't remember how much of this was like in the terms that we see it today, where monies are spent on, foreign entanglements, and taking it away from what people's needs were at home.
How interesting. You think perhaps that was not?
I'm not sure, you see, because remember, I was a student, and the students were, also I was more, I think I was much more middle class than a lot of the other people that were students at the time, maybe who were really having a lot of economic mm-hmm. problems and came from homes where there was tremendous unemployment at that time. And the unemployed councils were formed, and there were the demonstrations of the veterans, the bonus marchers.
What's a bonus march?
The veterans from the First World War who were demanding a bonus, and who marched on Washington at the beginning of the 30s. Yeah. And the unemployed councils and the very, very, the deep depression that was in existence with people being evicted and so on. The Roosevelt administration wasn't, to start off with, all that concerned about this. Later, as a result of all of these pressures, there were measures taken by the Roosevelt administration, the NRA and all of the other economic measures, part of the New Deal that came about, and they came about as the result of the tremendous, tremendous ferment. But my recollections were around the foreign, the position of the United States, you know, with regard to the fascists.
As they should have been. And then the American Student Union and Young Communist League in college.
Yeah.
And you fought the QAC, the Codert?
Coudert Committee. He had a French pronunciation for his name. That was the un-American Activities Committee in New York State that was hounding teachers. Basically, they were hounding teachers and around curriculum. Anyhow, the American Student Union was a college level organization, and I can't, you know, it wasn't certainly wasn't only communist, but it was both around student needs and around the foreign policy. And by the time I got into college, the struggle against fascism had escalated. The Spanish Civil War had started in 1937, and the United States had a horrible policy. I mean, they essentially were still trading with Spain and Franco, you know, the legitimate elected government. I mean, in Spain, the monarchy had been overthrown, I think, in 1936, and they had established a republican form of government in Spain. And then Franco, aided by Mussolini and Hitler, overthrew that legitimately elected government in Spain, and the Spanish Civil War started. And it was an international conflict, because people who fought in the war, there were the international brigades sent people from, I don't know, 40 countries, I forget how many different countries, who came and fought alongside the people who were called the loyalists. And the college students were very much involved in that struggle. Many college students left school and went to Spain.
Was the Vietnam of that time? Maybe not.
Yeah, it'd probably be a hard, hard way to characterize it. Because it was much more worldwide.
Yes.
But Henry, for example, was only, how old was he when he went to Spain? He was not legal age, because he needed to get his parents' permission, and so he fabricated his age. And he went because he knew his parents wouldn't give him permission to go. So, and many of the people who went to Spain were 17 and 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds, yeah. So the student movement was, and by that time, you know, there were some steps that had been taken by the Roosevelt administration around the Depression, but it was still not, you know, great prosperity in this country. So, but I think I was trying to, again, remember there were a lot of, and then there was also this anti-communist hysteria that had started with the rap, because the Rap Kuvert Committee was when I was in college.
Yeah.
It was when I was in college. So even though that, you know, sort of preceded HUAC, which was later on in the 40s, there was a tremendous, you know, repression among teachers. I mean, you have to remember that the whole society, in other words, what was going on in the United States wasn't just going on among the working, among workers, it was going on among intellectuals, and it permeated the schools. So there was certainly, you know, what was being the atmosphere in the schools was to be involved with the struggles that were going on in the street.
What a concept!
Yeah. So, and the growth of the Communist Party. The Communist Party was growing. There was tremendous racism. There were some, the Tom Mooney trial, the lynchings, and the so many of the big cases of blacks, particularly in the South, were happening in those middle 30s. So students were also involved, and the schools were involved in those. I was going to say maybe more than even than the workers, but certainly the students and the teachers were very much. So the growth of the Communist Party was growing tremendously in that period, and they formed the Young Communist League because there was, you know, it was a real need. I mean, young people were very interested and wanted to have an organized way of being able to respond to these things. So I was involved. I joined the Young Communist League when I started college, I guess, pretty soon after I started college. Actually, and it was at college. It wasn't, I was very involved through college. I lived in the Bronx and I went to Brooklyn College. And I didn't have close association with young people where I lived. I spent all my time at school. I mean, I had a long way. I traveled an hour and 20 minutes on the subway each day, each way, to school, and then again in the evening. So I had classes, and I had the after-school activities, going to these meetings. So that's where I spent all my time. So that's where all the things that I was involved with and influenced by took place. Coming home, it was my family rather than neighborhood activities at that time in my life.
So. But it says also, we have here, that in that same period you were involved in the founding of the Independent Progressive Party.
No, that was later.
I lied. I'm sorry. It is.
Yes, no,
46, 48.
Yes, no, that was later.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
From 41 to 43, I was at graduate school in Cleveland at, oh God, not right now, I'm blocking on the name of the
Western Reserve University.
Thank you. Western Reserve University School of Social Work, where I had a partial scholarship, believe it or not. Anyhow, while there, I was involved, really not, I didn't have a lot of time, but I was involved minimally with a Communist Party, a community branch in Cleveland, and did attend their meetings, and probably participated in some activities, but I would say minimally, because school was very demanding. And what was probably most notable for me at Western Reserve was that it was the first time in my life that I was away from New York, where there are so many Jews that you feel like you're part of the majority, and came to Cleveland, where for the first time in my life I experienced anti-Semitism.
In school?
Oh, yes, in school.